My next guest is a London-based Financial Times reporter, but she's in Dublin to give a talk about something completely different. This Friday, she's going to address the Dalkey Book Festival on the question, can you be a good Muslim and a feminist? Mehreen Khan, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good to talk to you. Like most religions, the Catholic religion in particular I'm thinking of, it's not particularly pro-feminist. The perception is that Islam is not very much a feminist religion, nor indeed is it fair in terms of gender equality. Is that a misconception?
Sure. I mean, I think you're right. That is definitely the wide stream opinion. But I think we have to kind of clarify what we mean by feminism and also what we talk about when we talk about Islam. So there's obviously a kind of theological dimension about what the revelation says about the place of women. And then I guess there's lived reality of Muslim women in the West and in Muslim countries and the sort of inegalitarianism that exists in those societies. But on the basic question of whether there's any tension between them, I would definitely say no. It's about finding commonality. And if feminism, you know, at its very essence is about equality between the genders, then I would argue that Islam, like other monotheistic religions, is exceptionally sort of egalitarian in terms of class structures, social structures, and between the genders.
But in terms of practicality, one area really, Mehreen, where it's not equal is that in some parts of the world, women are expected to cover themselves from top to toe in a burqa. And that is the antithesis of feminism in many ways.
So Islam has kind of rules about covering, and they actually do exist for men just as much as they exist for women. So men also have rules about which parts of their body they are and are not allowed to show. So, for example, a Muslim man wouldn't be able to go to the, if he was a practicing Muslim man, wouldn't be able to go to the beach wearing shorts, because there is a navel to the knee sort of element about what you should wear in public spaces. The clothing debate is the most, I think, is the one that attracts the most political attention. Actually, when you look at the sort of the fundamentals of what Islam says about dressing, there is a principle, and that principle is one of modesty. And then that has been interpreted throughout the centuries and across the world in lots of different ways. So the burqa, for example, is common in countries like Afghanistan, but you probably would never see a woman in Malaysia ever wear a burqa, because the interpretation of what that word modest means has been fits different countries' ways of how they dress.
But whose interpretation was that? Was that a male interpretation or a female interpretation? I'm guessing if you're covered from top to toe and can only see out through a tiny little slit for your eyes, no woman would have dreamt that up.
On the face of it, it looks like this is something that only a man would want for his wife. But I don't know that many people who wear the burqa, but I do know a handful who wear it in the UK, and they are women who are very self-confident about their faith. And for them, the idea of covering up is their own interpretation of modesty. And the burqa exists as one form of clothing. Lots of other women do other things. I think essentially it comes down to the idea of how to express your religious conscience. Mm. And lots of people find it very, very alienating that another person could make that choice.
Is it down to the central argument that that you can let your faith dictate your life, or you can let your faith be part of your life? If you let your faith dictate your life, does that not infringe on your other personal freedoms?
If practicing your religion gives you a sense of fulfillment and is what you do under your own free will, as part of your expression of human consciousness, then I think it's very difficult for somebody else to say you're letting your religion dominate your life. People have varying degrees of piety. Some Muslims call themselves Muslims, but really don't sort of adhere to the basic principles of Islam, and other people take it intensely literally. That is the diversity of religion. There are over a billion Muslims in the world, and trying to dictate how some of them will practice their faith and how others wouldn't is very difficult, unless you essentially want the state or other authorities to do that. Islam, in that sense, has no central authority. There is nobody of the equivalent of a pope or a church institution which tells Muslims the best way to practice their faith.
But isn't
for
that
some
the,
of them, it's extremely the, different to
yeah,
others.
But that's the problem, though. And then you have countries like Saudi Arabia where you wouldn't be allowed to drive a car. I don't know if you drive, but you would be equally entitled to drive a car here in this country as a man or a woman. Yet, for some reason, women are deemed not able to drive a car in Saudi Arabia, nor are they allowed out without the company of a man. I'm not sure what they expect might happen, but that also is a rule that is very strictly enforced in that country. I mean, do you agree with that interpretation, or do you at least understand that interpretation?
That is a interpretation. I think the thing about Saudi Arabia that most people miss is that it is seen to be the equivalent of the Vatican. Actually, Saudi Arabia has no religious authority in terms of the state of Saudi Arabia for any Muslims in the world. So they are not the standard bearers of Islam. They just have a very conservative form of their own religion. Saudi Arabia generally is a repressive society. It is not a democratic society. There is no political dissent in Saudi Arabia. There is no real democracy in Saudi Arabia. Therefore, the oppression of women is, you can see it in the overall social spectrum of the type of country that Saudi Arabia is. Turkey, for example, is completely different. Turkey is a Muslim country where if you were a Muslim woman, you were not allowed to wear the headscarf in schools or in public spaces until only a few decades ago. Turkey took the opposite approach, where it sort of banned religious conservatism as its way of enforcing what it means to be a Muslim state. Countries do lots of different things, and they justify themselves in lots of different ways.
Who's right, Mehreen, in your opinion?
There is no right. I mean, the beauty of religion is that the beauty of Islam is its incredible diversity, and it's existed for over 1400 years.
But is it not a better
argument?
A very
geographically diverse faith.
Women have inherent rights as human beings above whatever someone of any faith thinks of them, that they should be entitled to do what they want. They should be entitled to wear what they want. They should be entitled to drive. Yes, there may be people who are happy in burqas. Yes, there may be people who are happy to stay at home and be driven as opposed to driving themselves. But there are many others who aren't like
sure.
that, who I think, want
but this
to
is
drive.
A discussion, this is a political discussion about freedom and democracy and how nation states treat their citizens. I don't think it's a religious debate, because some authorities use religion as their justification for how they interpret what women or men should do in public spaces is not necessarily doesn't make it a theological discussion. You would find it very, very difficult to have religious authorities outside of Saudi Arabia who are not of a conservative bent, who would justify women not being able to drive cars. So some people think it's very problematic that there's nobody that you can turn to when Islam has a problem, to paraphrase Henry Kissinger, there's no one you can call when there's a problem with Islam, because that is the nature of how the religion has grown and evolved over centuries. It doesn't have a central authority, and countries will do things and behave in very, very different ways towards their citizens.
Which
it's
in many ways
is not necessarily an Islamic problem.
In many ways is the result and is the effect of what we're seeing in the world now, that there is no central force, no unifying force to tackle all of the problems, the perceived problems and the real problems, with how those who are misusing the religion are doing such terrible things. Mehreen Khan, you're going to be speaking at the Dalkey Book Festival this Friday. If you want to attend that, you can look up the website for the Dalkey Book Festival. Mehreen Khan, Financial Times reporter in London, thank you for joining us.